Matho was astonished. He had never known anyone to face him. All the two-leggeds ran away at his approach. Now, this skinny little being was telling him to step aside.
"I hope you taste much better than you look," Matho said. "Don't say I didn't warn you. Beings much more powerful than you tremble at the sight of me."
"That is true," replied Iktomi. "But you don't know how powerful I truly am."
"The only thing more powerful about you is your odor," roared Matho, so incensed at Iktomi's arrogance that he rose on his hind legs. There are few sights more frightening than Matho on his hind legs rising to a height equal to four of Iktomi's, whose insides were turning to mush. It was much too late to run, because the only thing on a prairie that could outrun Matho was Tatanka. Iktomi gathered all his courage, which he never had in abundance, and stood his ground. "I am more powerful than you," he retorted, "and unless you are too afraid, I can prove it to you." Matho crashed to the earth and doubled up in laughter. His loud guffaws rolled across the hills as he howled with laughter until the tears ran down from his beady little eyes. When he could laugh no longer, he sat up and stared at Iktomi, who, of course, was the very image of confidence.
"There is no one more powerful than me," said Matho. "Therefore I am afraid of nothing, not even you." At that he rolled over with laughter once again.
"So," he giggled, "prove to me how powerful you are."
"I will," said Iktomi, "but I will give you first chance. For not only am I powerful, I am also fair."
Matho giggled all the more. "What must I do?"
"I know you have been wounded many, many times, and you are still alive."
"Yes," admitted Matho, "I have been wounded many times by two-leggeds, so I have many arrowheads and lance points in my body."
"Exactly," shouted Iktomi, "but so do I, and much more than you.
Still, I will give you a chance. You must cough up all the arrowheads and lance points in your body, and I will do the same. Then we will see who has more."
Matho couldn't stop giggling.
"Very well," he said, "I will. But it hardly seems worth the trouble. I could just eat you and be done with it."
"Then we need to make a wager," Domi said. "If you win, I will show you a creek where the fish are so plentiful you can catch them with your eyes closed. What's more, you can eat me, too, if I win. You must provide me with food for a month.
You probably are stringy and will be tough to eat. But you have a wager nonetheless," decided Matho. "I'll go first."
So saying, he jumped to his feet, rose to his hind legs, and began to pound his chest, and then coughed and coughed until he began to spit up arrowheads and lance points. Of course, as Iktomi knew he would have to, Matho closed his eyes as he gagged and coughed. And as the objects flying out of him were beginning to form a large pile, Iktomi sprang into action. As quickly as Matho coughed up arrowheads and lance points, he swallowed them. When Matho finally finished and sat back down, he looked at the pile in front of him. It was rather small.
"Now you," he said, not the least bit worried. He knew Iktomi's puny little body couldn't possibly have more than one or two arrowheads.
Iktomi raised himself as tall as he could stand, pounded on his chest, and began to cough and cough. Soon, one arrowhead came out, then another, then a lance point. In front of the astonished Matho, Iktomi's pile grew and grew higher and higher. It was hard to believe that Iktomi could have been wounded so many times, but there it was. A pile of arrowheads and lance points much larger than Matho's. If Matho was dim-witted, he was also honorable. So he yielded, though he kept mumbling to himself in astonishment. And true to his word, he supplied Iktomi with berries and fish for an entire month.
Our current method of choosing leaders reminds me too much of Matho's loss at the hands of the clever Iktomi. And although that system functions primarily to perpetuate itself, we shouldn't be prevented from realistically assessing the true character of any candidate. Records of achievement are important if they are real and not concocted like Iktomi's, but so are character and virtue. I am always leery of anyone who first and foremost touts his or her record of public service. I tend to look at the person. What is he or she without that record? I look for the no moccasins and the crazy horses because I am influenced by quiet dignity, and the person who walks through camp with his or her head down rather than the one who struts. I would vote for a truly humble person. Humility may be the most difficult virtue to learn and maintain. As a society, we reward arrogance and attitude, and our heroes tend to be loud and brash sports figures, millionaire developers, movie stars, and the like, those kinds of people who don't know or don't want to know what humility is. But of all the virtues, humility is the one that life will teach us if we don't learn it of our own accord. Two young men were hunting far from their village one day, long ago, during a time of great hardship for their people. A great drought had driven the animals from the usual territories, but the people themselves seemed to have lost their way as well. They were weak and unhappy, yielding to confusion and anger because they had forgotten the good ways that had made them strong. The young hunters had not been successful and were discouraged, but they kept to the trail nonetheless. One morning, they saw a strange sight at the top of a hill, a floating white mist. They had not seen clouds for many months and were curious, but also afraid. With much caution, they approached the floating mist. From out of the mist came a woman, a very beautiful young woman, and she was naked. The hunters were astonished, of course, and didn't know what to do. One of them immediately had impure thoughts and approached the young woman, intending to take full advantage of the situation. The second hunter tried to stop him, to no avail. Before the first hunter could reach the young woman, the mist rolled down and covered him, and in a while it rolled back. The other hunter was terrified to see that his companion was now nothing more than a skeleton. His flesh had been consumed by the mist, and snakes were crawling in and around the bones. Realizing that he was in the presence of something mysterious and powerful, the remaining hunter humbled himself before the young woman. She spoke, commending him for his humility, and gave him a task. He was to return immediately to his village, with instructions for his people to prepare a lodge for her. Then they were to wait for her to come. The young hunter did as he was told, convincing the people of his village that they should do as the young woman had asked. Soon after the lodge was prepared, the young woman appeared with a bundle in her arms. Inviting the elders into the lodge, she taught them seven ceremonies they must perform faithfully. If they did as she instructed, they would once again become powerful and flourish. Opening her bundle, she revealed to them a sacred pipe. She taught them how to use the pipe, and then she departed. The people watched as she walked to the top of a hill where a floating white mist had appeared. The young woman walked into the mist and emerged from the other side as a female white buffalo. This, of course, is a condensed version of the most revered of Lakota stories, the coming of the white buffalo calf maiden. She brought us not only the pipe, which we still have to this day, but also the basis for our spiritual beliefs and the ceremonies through which we carry them out. But there are two simple lessons in the story that are often overlooked. We did as the white buffalo calf maiden instructed us to do. We followed the ceremonies and lived in the good ways she taught us, and we became strong. In fact, we became the most powerful people on the plains, although I shudder to think what might have happened if both hunters had been brash and arrogant. but I think the white buffalo calf maiden appeared to these two particular young men precisely because one was arrogant and one was humble. The first lesson is that arrogance was destroyed. The white buffalo calf maiden had no use for it. And the mist that covered the arrogant hunter is life itself. The second lesson is that humility was used as an instrument for good. Most of us have been at times generous, brave, respectful, and even wise. But humility is the one virtue that validates all the others. The people in Nomakasin's village honored her for her humility rather than for the courageous deed she performed as a young woman. Likewise, though Crazy Horse was the bravest of the brave on the battlefield and his exploits are legendary, those who knew him best spoke more often of the humble, quiet way he lived life. But the fact is, there are also the Iktomis of the world, those who hide behind the illusion of arrogance and make it seem real and appealing. A humble person rarely stumbles, the old ones say, because such a person walks with face toward the earth and can see the path ahead. On the other hand, the arrogant man who walks with his head high to bask in the glory of the moment will stumble often, because he is more concerned with the moment than with what lies ahead. The Lakota warriors of old who took part in the Waktogalaka and publicly recounted their deeds had every right to feel proud of their accomplishments and accept the honor they had earned. They understood and were often reminded that it was the deed or deeds performed under the most difficult of circumstances that earned them the honor, not the telling. And if the honor for a deed well done was accepted with humility, it only served to increase the worth of the honor and enhance the man's reputation. The burden of humility is light, because a truly humble person divests himself or herself of the need for recognition. The burden of arrogance, on the other hand, grows heavier day by day. In sharing the journey of life, travel with the humble person on the quiet path.